Assalamu alaikum. Good morning. We are having technical difficulties. So give us a few minutes. You have tuned in to the program sponsored by New Africa Excellent Miraj Speaks. Your host, Salima Muhammad, and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. Dr. Muhammad, do I have you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Give us a few minutes, listeners. Let's begin. I think we're in fine. I was trying to get Uncle Murad in. However, if I try to switch over now, it's going to end the call. So, brothers and sisters, we're trying to get accustomed to the technology here. So, Dr. Muhammad, let's go ahead and begin.
Okay.
Again, brothers and sisters, welcome. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Miraj Speaks, your host, Salima Muhammad, Dr. Nadia Muhammad, and today we have a wonderful show. We begin with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. We greet the listening audience in the Arabic tongue, Assalamu alaikum. The title of this show is Family and Community. Today's topic is caretaking for loved ones. What is family? Family is a foundation not only in Islamic society, however, society in general. The peace and security offered by a stable family unit is imperative and paramount for the spiritual growth of its community. A harmonious society conducts social order and is extended to families and children. Caretaking of loved ones is dedicated to Dr. Nadia and I's mother, Hadia Al-Amin Muhammad, also known in the Islamic community as Sister Alice OX. We honor our mother along with our seven other siblings, her grandchildren, and extended family. Our mother, Hadia Al-Amin Muhammad, Sister Alice OX, and Brother Abdullah Muhammad, Brother Robert 7X, raised nine children under the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. When Sister Hadia was expecting her ninth child, she went to college and obtained her bachelor's degree in management science. She graduated summa cum laude. She became the director of social services in the town in which she resided and was later appointed executive director of the Office on Aging, where she retired. When she became ill, as a family, we decided to keep our mother in her home as long as possible, allowing familiar surroundings and access to visiting family members. She eventually relocated to Dr. Nadia's home in North Carolina, where she transitioned. Dr. Nadia, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
If you'll give the listening audience a little background on yourself, that would be wonderful.
Yes. Welcome to the listening audience. I want to thank you, Sister Salima, Brother Murad, for inviting me to speak on your show today. I want to especially thank your illustrious audience for tuning in today. And I want to start in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. And so my name is Sister Dr. Nadia Muhammad. From an educational standpoint, I have a bachelor's degree in biology, and I have a master's degree in biomedical informatics, as well as a PhD in public health. I've worked in the pharmaceutical industry for over 15 years. I've also served in the community, collaborating with other organizations in the community for underserved populations for over 15 years. I have a very strong interest in health promotion and education among diverse populations with particular emphasis on underserved populations such as those in the African, Black, and Latino communities. And in my spare time, I have a passion to mentor college-bound students in the area of medicine and public health. So that's a little bit about me and what I do and what I enjoy most. Thank you for the question.
Wonderful. Let's begin with our first question, Dr. Nadia. When our mother became ill, what was the time span of her caretaking from beginning until transition? May Allah be pleased with her.
Thank you for the question. And I just wanted to add that you did such a beautiful introduction of mom and her background and her experience. I want to take the time to honor all mothers in the community whose shoulders and sacrifices we rest on. So I wanted to preface my answer by just saying that. And also, I also would like to preface your question by laying a foundation from Allah regarding why it is important to care for your parents during their time of need. Now, Allah says in the Holy Quran in Surah 17, entitled Bani Israel, or the Israelites, we read in verses 23 and 24, Allah says, "And thy Lord has decreed that you serve none but him, then do good to parents. If either or both of them reach old age with thee, say not fie, nor chide them, and speak to them a generous word, and lower to them thy wing of humility out of mercy, and say, My Lord, have mercy on them, as they brought me up when I was little." And so I wanted to make sure that we have a foundation. Allah is first and foremost in everything that we do. And so your question is quite, it's an interesting question because mother, like all mothers, are very unique and special. They coming from our experience in the Black community, our mothers are our superheroes. And the expectation of a mother is to do it all, right, to take plenty. Our mothers are independent, they're caregivers, they're providers, they're counselors, consultants, and confidants. And so, and let's continue on. So with mom and those who are listening, I know you have had the same experience, some of you, the same experience that I have with my mom. And so with my mother, her condition, it wasn't acute. It didn't happen all of a sudden. Her condition was more like of a chronic condition. I started noticing sudden changes in her ability to carry out her activities of daily living. And so I want to say her decline was quite gradual. This wasn't something that happened all of a sudden. And so I began noticing subtle changes in her behavior. She no longer had the desire to drive, cook. Her energy was low. And she really lost her desire to engage in things she enjoyed doing, like traveling. She loved to cook. And she loved to sew. And she had zero interest. And so it was about 2009, 2010, I also noticed that she was presented with physical changes, such as rapid weight loss and changes in her functional status. And what do I mean by that? Well, she began experiencing problems with, like, movement, tremors, stiffness, slowness, and difficulty in walking. And also, she struggled to follow storylines. Or you would talk to mom, and you'd be like, Mom, remember when this happened or that happened? She was there, but she was not there. So I noticed that there was a change in her mood. She started suffering from depression, frustration, and just overall difficulty with completing everyday tasks. And I'm going through these symptoms because I know that there may be listeners who know someone right now in their family who's going through this. You may be going through it, or a family, or a friend, or your mother, or your father, and so you may not be aware of what's going on with your loved one. So I'm taking out the time to go through these symptoms because it actually may help save somebody else's life or help you navigate through caregiving. And so I'm going to continue to go on with the symptoms. And so by the time that we had a diagnosis, which mom got a diagnosis in 2011, late 2011, early 2012, and she was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. And at that time, Lewy body dementia, there wasn't much attention dedicated to Lewy body dementia. And so the disease was highlighted and brought to the national spotlight. If you all could recall, and many of you may already know, who the entertainer Robin Williams, who actually developed Lewy body dementia, and he committed suicide after learning he had Lewy body dementia. I'm not saying that's the direct cause of his, you know, reason and rationale for committing suicide, but I will say that this disease was not brought to the spotlight until I would say about 2014. And so I'm going to go into a little bit details about Lewy body dementia, but I won't be long. But I think that it's very premier and important because the symptoms are not readily recognized in the medical industry and in the medical field and in the healthcare system. And so if you know someone who's experiencing these symptoms, take a note to what Lewy body dementia actually is. And so now Lewy body dementia is the second most common form of dementia. The most common form, as some of us may know, is Alzheimer's disease. And so Lewy body dementia is an umbrella term for dementia, and it's associated with the presence of Lewy bodies, which formulates in the brain. So Lewy body dementia affects about 1.4 million individuals and their families in the United States. And so though many families are affected by the disease, few individuals and medical professionals are aware of the symptoms. They are unaware of the diagnostic criteria, or even that Lewy body dementia exists. And so there are important facts about Lewy body dementia that you should all be aware of. And so there are three common presentations of LBD, which stands for Lewy body dementia, and will develop very similarly, cognitively-wise, physically, and also, you know, people who have this disease may experience sleep deprivation and they may present with behavior features. So if you know there's going to be symptoms in your loved one, please reach out to your healthcare provider. Some individuals will also start out with a movement disorder, like my mother. She was initially diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. She didn't have that. Well, another group of individuals will start off with a cognitive or memory disorder, and they may mistake that diagnosis for a person having Alzheimer's disease. But over time, two or more distinctive features become apparent, leading to the diagnosis of dementia with Lewy bodies. But lastly, I'm going to be very quick because I know we have to move on. A small group of people will present with neuropsychiatric symptoms, which can cause hallucinations, behavioral problems, and difficulties with the complex mental activities. And so I just wanted to preface mom's care by just going into some details about Lewy body dementia. There's still not a whole lot that's known about this disease, and I just wanted to bring awareness to your listening audience. So thank you for the question.
Thank you, Dr. Nadia. You brought a very important point, and I know this is going to be imperative to the community. If you can take a few minutes, you mentioned something extremely important here regarding the misdiagnosis.
Right.
Explain that process and what, because you were the one who really instigated the proper diagnosis, but it took a number of years. Can you please take a few minutes and go over that process, misdiagnosis versus diagnosis, and maybe advice to the audience on how to handle this particular circumstance?
Yeah, so what I like to say about misdiagnosis, it wasn't just misdiagnosis, it was no diagnosis. And so what you have to do, you have to be quite proactive in your loved one's care. And so you have to raise the important questions. If the physician doesn't know what the situation is and they don't understand the etiology of what's going on with your loved one, then you find another physician. You find another doctor so you can find someone who's empathetic to your situation. I went through about 7 doctors until I actually got a confirmative diagnosis. And the process of caregiving is very difficult. It's very frustrating. You want to give up. You're trying to figure out what's going on with your loved one. You're stressed out. But my advice to you is to not give up. But also ensure that you do your due diligence, you know, where you can call online, you can research, you know, different diagnoses and disease processes, or you can solicit help from a friend or a family member just to get more information. But what's most important for diagnostic criteria is to ensure that you find a doctor, again, that's compassionate, that's empathetic to your situation, and then you continue to push on and pressure those doctors to help you find out what's going on with your loved one. And so that's what happened with me. You know, they said she had Parkinson's disease. And so it's really hard with diagnosing dementia because there's not a clinical test that one can perform in order to come up with a diagnosis. It's really not until postmortem analysis, like after a person passes away, that you can actually go into the brain and actually see whether the person has Lewy body dementia. And so while we got a confirmatory diagnosis that mom did have Lewy body dementia, we really didn't know confirmatively wise because we did not have an autopsy done, and that can only be confirmed through post-mortem autopsy where you dissect the brain, and that was not going to happen. And so that's what I would say to the listening audience.
Thank you. Dr. Nadia, the care of Sister Hadia required your daily schedule to change. What specific changes were required, and how did you go about that?
So with caregiving, whether your loved one has dementia or physical disability, or you have children sometimes who are physically disabled and mentally disabled, in my situation, in a lot of situations, you know, my mother required 24-hour care. And what that means is that, you know, my mom did not have the ability to bathe herself, I mean, or toilet, or, you know, there was a lot of lifting that was involved and quite a bit of dressing that I had to do. So I was my mother's eyes, I was her ears, I was her hands, I was her feet. By God's grace and permission, you know, he entrusted me to care for her 24 hours around the clock. And so you have to separate yourself from your personality, because it's not about you at that point. It's about caring for your loved one. Of course, there are things that you have to do for yourself, and we'll get into that later. But you're really sad making lots of sacrifices to care for the person that you love. And so I needed to attend to all the activities of daily living. And some of them I already mentioned, bathing, toileting, lifting, and dressing. And I also had to attend to all the instrumental activities of daily living, which included cooking and administering medication, managing her health care, shuffling mom, for lack of a better term, I didn't shuffle, I gently took mom back and forth to the doctor to her appointment. So you have to be very patient and humble because it's very, not only is it time consuming, but it's arduous. And it can be quite stressful. So when you're caregiving, you're just not addressing the physical aspect of caregiving, but you're addressing the mental aspect as well. And so you're serving as a spiritual warrior for the person that you are providing care for and for yourself. You know, people who are sick, you know, they're very empathetic, and their emotional tone is definitely low. And rightfully so, you understand, you know, you're going through an illness. It's chronic. It's not going away, and you're not in a good place. And so you do have to serve as a minister, or you have to minister unto your loved one because they're looking at you for strength. They're depending on you to get them through the next day. You know, in terms of the physical limitations that they have. So, so you can't just go out and go see your favorite movie or a restaurant. You can't show up at, you know, museum. Sorry, I had to add that little slang. Or you can't hop on a plane to go visit your favorite vacation spot. And so in some cases also, you can't work. I mean, you're not able to, if you're providing 24-hour care for your mom or for your dad, there's no space for work. And so you have to give up on some of the pleasures of life as well, the things that you enjoy the most. And so I was not working during the time of caregiving. I was also at the time, I was a single parent. And so my experience was a bit more complicated because I had other caregiving factors that I had to consider. So there were some challenges there, but it was a really wonderful experience. So thanks for the question.
I want to talk about some of the challenges because we work closely together at times. I was mother's health proxy. And it was so, we can laugh about it now, doctor. It was so hilarious. You had to speak with regard to other obligations. You had to speak to several doctors and nurses. And when it came to our understanding, you know, for palliative care versus hospice, we were speaking to a number of physicians and a number of nurses. And I remember you said, look, you told your siblings who were supporting you, you said, just call and act like you're me. This is not Dear Muhammad. And we all sound alike so much. And I remember speaking to a nurse one morning, and she says, Miss Muhammad, I just spoke with you. Good to hear your voice again. And I recall saying, yes, ma'am, here's my question. But we didn't skip a beat. We had to really assist you because you were, you know, exhausted.
Definitely have to tag team. You do need a social support system. And so the challenge with the healthcare system, especially if your loved one is hospitalized and there's hospitalizations required multiple times throughout the year, you'll find that when your loved one is in the hospital, the staff changes from hour to hour. So you have to deal with shift changes. You may have a nurse or a physician on call between 7 and 3, and they get it. They understand what Lewy body dementia is, and they understand what dementia looks like. And, you know, Lewy body dementia is like a wasting disease. It looks a lot like mad cow. And so you have, you know, people in the healthcare industry and in that field and doctors and the clinical team that understand what this looks like, and they understand the needs of the patient. But you may have someone that comes on from 3 to 11 who has no clue. And so there's information that's lost in translation, treatment plans are missed. And then you have the shift that comes in from 11 to 7, and all they want to do is sleep. In some cases, well, all they want to do is if the administration is not around, so I'll have to deal with your situation in the morning. And so when you have a mom who's in the hospital and you're dealing with these types of challenges, you know, everyone doesn't have the same level of empathy and compassion. So you have to navigate through that. You have to be able to, you know, deal with people of multiple personalities in order to successfully get your loved one through those traumatic experiences. And so you all were very helpful in terms of, you know, tag teaming from the administrative perspective, being able to call in when I was not able to call in, when I need just to come back home and sort of lay down and rest my head for a minute or two. But what I will say is that some people don't have social support systems in place. And if you don't, you know, a law is sufficient for any and every need that you have. I know sometimes when you hear that, you don't believe it when you're going through it, but I promise you, he's with you. He's with you every second and every step of the way. And so just keep that in mind as you're going through these trials and tribulations.
Yes, ma'am. What was your most challenging aspect of caretaking?
Well, I will tell you, it wasn't one or the other. It was a lot of challenges for me. There were multiple factors. I would say one of them was isolation, because I'm a social butterfly. That's just who I am as a person. And so, you know, I was removed from, I don't know, I'm not a person who's in a social, I'm not a limelight person, but I like to go out, I like to travel. I enjoy spending time with family and friends. So I felt like, you know, I felt very isolated. I felt very alone. I felt like, you know, I was going through this by myself. That's not rational thinking, right? But when you're going through it, this is what you think. You think that you're alone. And so you have to definitely tap into your relationship with Allah, because you're never alone. Allah is always with you. And so I did feel isolated for a minute. I'm a truth teller, so I have to be honest. That's what was going on in my head. in addition to that, I suffered quite a bit. I was already an insomniac, right? I don't sleep much. But it became magnified when I became a caregiver. So, and you know when you don't sleep, that affects your mood. And so I was very moody. There were times that I just didn't feel well mentally. And so those were some of the challenges that I had to deal with when I was caregiving for mother. And other challenges that we had mentioned earlier involved, you know, coordinating and collaborating with the medical staff establishment in terms of treatment of care. And so with Lewy body dementia, there's no real standard of care. It just does not exist, right? And so medical professionals, you know, pretty much are at a loss in terms of how to care for your loved one. You know, mom was hospitalized 12 times in 1 year, right? She was. And so that was our reality at the time. And mostly it was because they just could not help us at home. And so, you know, we had to, you know, put mom in these health care settings where we could get some additional support. But that changed later on as we became more familiar with the disease process and we were able to get more assistance at home. But that did not happen right away, right? We didn't know what resources we had available. We were new. And so mom also had to go to rehab for like 2 or 3 times in 1 year for she needed assistance in physical rehabilitation. And she also was experiencing issues with her throat and she couldn't swallow. And so she needed occupational therapy as well. So we had some challenges because, again, Lewy body dementia, even though it's a common form of dementia, it's not commonly known what causes it and how. Well, we do know, but like I said, it has to be confirmed later on. But it's not well known how to treat this type of disease. It's not Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a different type of disease. That usually lasts over a span, sometimes 10 to 20 years. But Lewy body dementia, I mean, it's a very fast and rapid-paced degenerative disease. And, you know, from the time mom was diagnosed to the time she passed away, it was 3-year time span. So it was a very fast and rapid wasting disease. It's very different, and I wanted to make that distinction.
It was 3 years, and just a quick note, you know, prior to that, you're seeing her behavioral changes, and that was almost, what, a 10-plus time-year span. When you said there was no diagnosis, that was a very important point to bring up because we didn't know what was going on with mother.
No.
So it was a process. It absolutely was a process.
It was a process. I mean, because, you know, I would say about 2 years into the process, you know, her mom's thinking, you know, began to become impaired. You know, and so she lost lots of function in terms of executive planning and processing information. And she had problems with, you know, visual hallucinations. She was seeing things that just was not present or was not real. I mean, was not present or there. She suffered from, as you know, many people who have Lewy body dementia, they suffer from sleep disorders and paranoia. And sometimes they act out on what they dream about. And so, like you mentioned, there were quite a bit of behavioral and mood symptoms, including she was depressed and, of course, she experienced some apathy, anxiety as well, and she was very agitated, and she had delusions, and she was quite paranoid. So if you're on the call and you see so many subtle changes in your loved one, a family, a friend, a mother, a father, please don't hesitate to inquire about a Lewy body dementia diagnosis. Now, I will say this, there are other ailments that are out there that can cause these same symptoms, and that's like nutritional deficiencies. We're not going to get into that today, but that is something to think about. I just kind of wanted to throw that out there as well, just in case there are people who are listening and you see some of these presentations in your family members or friends. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Brothers and sisters, I want to take a few moments to tell you again this show is brought to you by New Africa Excellent. Marad Speaks. Our wonderful Uncle Marad was to be scheduled on this show with us, but we ran into technical difficulty, and we are new to the technology, and inshallah, God willing, we will rectify this in the future and have a smoother process. As we go on with the show, Dr. Nadia, you have two sons, and I especially, they were young sons at the time, admired the way they assisted you when they could with their grandmother. Can you speak about them for a few minutes and explain how that felt, how that felt to you to have the support and love of your grandchildren and the, just the admiration they had for their grandmother?
That's yes, thank you so much for bringing up that point. What mother doesn't go over their children, right? And so I was very lucky. Well, let me just say I was extremely blessed that I had two sons that would come in and assist me during my time of need. And sometimes that doesn't happen very often because, you know, we have our children, they have their lives. Some of our children are in college, some are just too young to help, and some are married and they just have their own lives. Well, you know, young people, sometimes they just get to what they're into, right? And so I was especially blessed to have my two sons that would help out. They would help me with lifting. They would even help me with cooking and washing clothes and just sitting with mom, just to be there, to hold her hand, to smile with her, to talk with her, just to let her know that, you know, that they were there to support her. And I think it's always a blessing when you can serve as an example. I look at it as if I was serving as an example for my two sons. My youngest son was 12 years old. And I think sometimes we want things to go smoothly for our children, that there's not going to be hurdles or obstacles in the road. No, you need hurdles. You need obstacles. And I think at a very young age, my sons were able to see that, you know, a lot of mercy comes out of every trial and that life is not going to be easy. You know, there's no crystal staircase here. And so we all have to pitch in. And I think from being an example, I was able to show them that we're all in this together as a family and as a community as well. And we have to start thinking about that from that frame of reference. And so it was an honor and a pleasure to serve my mother in the capacity I was able to serve her. I mean, I was very blessed that Allah entrusted me and endowed me to, you know, see through her care. And it was also an honor to be able to bring my two sons in the fold as well. And so that when life throws its challenges at them, this will be a precursor for them to be able to handle their stresses in life and the challenges that will come. And so thank you for bringing that up, Sister Salima. I really appreciate you remembering that about them.
You're welcome. And then I want to talk about our other siblings for a minute. I was so impressed. Waheem.
Oh.
Waheem is our special needs brother. And I tell you, Mother came to stay with me for 2 weeks in Georgia. And Waheem was my coach. Waheem taught me what to do. And I remember saying to Waheem, he was up all night, 24 hours. I said, Waheem, you are off. You do not have to. But he always would check in and warm on her. So sensitive, so sweet, so just there for her. Can we talk about Waheem for a few minutes?
Yes, we must. And so all I have to say, in all honesty, verity, I rest on Raheem's shoulders. He taught me the way. He was my example. Now, Waheem suffers from mental illness, and he's very limited in certain ways from a cognitive perspective, but he's more expansive than any person that I know who's so-called not doesn't have a a mental health illness diagnosis. And so the patience and the love that he showed my mother, because he was her primary caregiver before me, let me be clear. He was the primary caregiver with his limited cognitive capacity, but that goes to show you that Allah makes all things new. And so he was able to take care of her. Allah expanded his breast, and he was my example. He would stay up with mother all night because she was very uncomfortable. And like, he was a very strong man. He was able to lift her. He was able to get her food. and he taught me the ropes. And so, you know, it was an honor and pleasure to serve under his tutelage because he taught me so much about what to do. And I witnessed a lot of mercy through someone who, you know, he'll probably never live a regular life. He's never been married. He'll probably never have children. But the love.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to mention that to give.
It was just amazing.
It wasn't an amazing. It was just, and it's still amazing. She's just an amazing human being. The my sisters, Fatima and Sarada, they were supportive. Sarada would get us on the road. We would come to North Carolina, to Georgia, to visit mother at various points. Fatima would drive 8 hours herself, by herself, to come to you to give assistance with the cooking. I know that meant a great deal to you, didn't it, Doctor?
Oh, it was huge. And so the social support was amazing. And so I know there are people out there who don't have that. And so, again, I want to reiterate how fortunate that I was to have, you know, just you guys calling, you know, my siblings calling on the phone, how are we doing today? You know, what can we do from where we are? And so you weren't physically, you know, available all the time, but you were always available. Do you know what I mean? And so it was really wonderful to have the support from the family, from the Muslim community, and from the many friends that called in to check on mother. And so it was, like I said, it was just a wonderful experience. And there were times where I was a little low, because we all have to go to those places in life sometimes where we just don't know what the next moves are, and that's where faith steps in. So I'm thankful to Allah for giving me grace, His grace, and His graciousness through that entire process. But I know I could not have
done it.
Yes. Because, you know, Allah works through men and women. And so people
yes, ma'am.
In my life. And so I appreciate that. And the experience
and
is wonderful.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And our brother Iman, that man, was he an example. He reminded me of that song, Get There Any Way You Can. He would take the mega bus, he would come in, and he was consistent, wasn't he, Doctor?
He was very consistent. He was very consistent. And so that meant a lot. So, you know,
and then he would go ahead.
I wanted to say, I know there are many people out in our community who isn't as fortunate as we were, but we have to start recognizing and formulating coalitions to help those who are in need. It's not anybody else's job to do it. It's our responsibility to give back to our community. And so this is something that we have to discuss and implement.
Yes, this is so, so important. And I'm understanding, you know, in some respects how rare it is for families to work together, which is the essence of this show. Sometimes we don't get it right, but if we can give consistent examples.
I agree with that. Of how to get it right,
then we can move forward and heal as a community.
Yes.
Doctor, if you take a few minutes and speak about how caretaking affected your health.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Was that gradual? Was that over time? If you could just give us a few minutes on that, please.
I think it was gradual. There were definitely some detrimental physical effects that I experienced during caregiving. And so I would say that I neglected my own health. So basically by not following up with my own health care appointment, there were things that I needed to address that I didn't address. And so I took a few punches for that later on. It all came back. You know, when you're going through stressful experiences, you have lots of hormones that are being released in your body, and hormones control just about all functions of the body. And so when this is going on, you're experiencing stress, you don't see these things occurring. There's some underlying conditions that are brewing. And for me, one of those conditions, later on it came out that I suffered from a parathyroid lesion. And the parathyroid you know, it controls the level of calcium in the body, which controls brain function, the ability to think, and the ability to walk and function. And so I neglected myself by not following up with, you know, my appointments. I ate very poorly. Now, I ate nutritious meals, right? But when was there time to eat them? There was no time for that. And so I ate very poorly. And also experienced the mental effects of caregiving. You know, I would say I did become a little apathetic at a certain point. I wasn't quite a bit of depressed. Depression is real. I mean, I'm not, you know, I know there's a stigma that's attached to it, but there was no time for the what was me syndrome. I had to keep moving. And so I had to move fast and quickly because there was no time to put my head in the soup, basically, so to speak. And so as a result of that, I did neglect myself, and I don't recommend anyone doing that. Sometimes you just don't have too much of a choice in those types of crises. And when you're experiencing situations where you're on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's why I have to reiterate the fact that we have to find some unique solutions to help relieve, I won't say burden, but some of the stresses of caring for your loved one. I don't think any person that we care for is a burden. I know that's a lot of times we use the language burden in the literature. Well, Allah does not bear, he doesn't put on you no more of a burden that you could bear. And so we read that throughout the Holy Quran. So always remember that. You can handle it, because if you couldn't handle it, God would not have put it on you. So never give up. You keep fighting. You never give up.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Doctor, how challenging was it getting respite? And please include the cost factors. Some of the cost factors were just astronomical. If you could talk about that for a few minutes.
I forgot about the cost aspect. Just to get all there. And then, see, now, that was tremendous. Because at the time, I was not working a full-time job. And basically, we were just living off of mom, basically her retirement, which was very helpful, okay? It was very, very helpful. But the other challenge is when you care for someone who's not able to walk, someone who's not able to talk, there are quite a bit of ancillary supplies that one must purchase, and they're very expensive. And then when you're going back and forth to the doctors, you have quite a bit of copays that, you know, pile up. And so that's expensive. And then you have, like I stated, all the supplies that you need. If your loved one has advanced, you know, let's say physical problems across their body, you know, breaking down of the skin, there are supplies that one must need in order to apply to that person's, you know, body and to help them get through, you know, the day-to-day operations of just taking care of them. If your loved one is on a feeding tube, you know, the feeding tube, there's co-pays with the food, right? You have to pay for some of the equipment. You have to pay co-pays for the wheelchair. You have to pay co-pays for the walker. I mean, and it's a shame because, you know, in the medical care system, if you take a dollar over the amount that's required to obtain Medicaid, like for instance, say if you make $2,000 a month and you get a pension for $2,000, but Medicare requires that, you know, you can't make more than $19.99, you're $1 over. It's only $1 more than I'm getting. The Medicaid is saying it's $19.99 that we should provide you with full coverage. But what happens? You know, it's only a dollar difference, but I can't get full coverage with Medicaid. Guess what that means? That means that I have to pay for all the medical supplies. And so it's very, very expensive. And then the day-to-day operations of just washing clothes and buying laundry detergent and buying, you know, good nutritious foods. And it's very, very, very expensive. So you must be very creative and very thrifty. Because you want to ensure that your loved one is being cared for in the best of manner. So those are challenges, and that's why for all of us as a community to either start some type of outreach where we can at least donate supplies to people who need them, like diapers and temperatures and Band-Aid strips or whatever it is that you need. And so we have to start.
Excellent.
You know, unique solution. Well, thank you for the question.
Excellent. The, you know, I tell you that cost was, it was a new normal. and it was a new awareness. So thank you for that background. What advice would you give to one entering the caretaking role? And is there such a thing as preparing for it?
Let me just say this. I don't want to be candid. Caregiving someone, let me just be clear. It's not a death sentence, okay? I want to be clear. Nor is it a punishment. Allah is not punishing you. He's expanding your breast. So what I can say to you is don't give up. Look at it as an opportunity, not as punishment. Don't stop fighting for your loved ones, and don't stop fighting for yourself. Please, you know, I would say exchange expectation for appreciation and appreciate everything that Allah has blessed you with. Just keep in mind that Allah has entrusted you to care for his creation. That is a high honor that's been bestowed on you. You are stronger than you actually think you are. You get to learn about humility. You have the opportunity to learn about perseverance. You learn about the mercy of Allah. You become more humble. And you really, really learn about the intricacies, of yourself. You learn about who you are as a person. You learn about faith and Allah in yourself. And most importantly, it empowers you to strengthen your relationship that you have with Allah. And so oftentimes when we have problems, we go to one another, right? We call up our sister, our brother, our friend. We call up other people, but we don't seek refuge in Allah. And so caregiving, it gives you the opportunity to build your relationship with Allah. That, you know, you build on that foundation, and you become a better person as a result of that. And so I'll say this. There's no one, not your mother, not your father, not your husband, not your brother, not your sister, not your friend, not Netflix, Hulu, nobody. There's nobody that can bring you peace and solace through a trial like caregiving but Allah. I'm going to highlight that. And that's the advice that I can give, because that's what I learned through that whole experience. Only peace came through Allah. And I had to seek refuge in Allah on a daily basis. So keep up your prayers. Keep up your faith. Don't give up. Take on the sunset. Appreciate the fact that you can take on the sunset. Life is short, and you don't know how short it's going to be. And so I would like to just add, I wanted to say that to the listening audience.
So beautiful. Let's talk about Dad for a few minutes. The show was dedicated to Mother and the caretaking because you were the primary caretaker. But we had two parents. They needed a different type of care. Our father, Abdul Muhammad, also known in the Islamic community as Robert 7X, suffered a hemorrhagic stroke. And as a result, he was fully incapacitated. In fact, the only way he could communicate with us was blinking his eyes. From my experience, you know, living in a different state than he resided, his primary caretaking, hospital visits, was primarily done by our sister Medina and her mother. But for all of us, it still included a different type of caretaking. Can you explain that process for you, Dr. Nadia?
Yeah, so what happened with Dad, the process was a little bit different because I was not on the front line of his care. I was more of, you know, caregiving from afar, basically serving as a support system, you know, as best as I could from where I was. There were some challenges there in terms of, because his condition was very, 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 very I won't say it was complicated, but he had a very severe degenerative injury. I mean, it was a very severe injury. And it wasn't like mother, we had the opportunity to gradually say goodbye. It was more like he was there, but he wasn't there. It happened quite abruptly. It was acute. It wasn't chronic. And so for me, what hurt the most was that I really wasn't able to be there to see him maybe on a day-to-day basis. You know, sometimes you can't go to hospital every day or, a weekly basis, and there's not really much that you can do. So for me, that experience was a little bit different. I wasn't hands-on. I wasn't quite there to see through all of that. There were some challenges, though, with his treatment plan. Again, he had a severe stroke. And when you have an injury like that, that's severe like that, the quality of life is going to be compromised. And so to see him in that state was quite challenging. It was hurtful. But I will tell you, I didn't give up, because I know Allah is at the forefront of each and every trial. And so I want to say that it wasn't like my caregiving experience with mother, but it also that my caregiving experience with mother afforded me the opportunity to get through my caregiving experience with dad. And again, I wasn't a frontline caregiver, but I was behind the scenes, and I tried as much as I can to offer support from where I was, because I was still just, getting through my caregiving experience with mother. So it overlapped, which was very challenging because they were sitting around the same time. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It was just a very different experience. Nonetheless, it was very hurtful. But it expanded my breath, too, because we had two parents who were very sick. And so you learn and you continue to learn to solely depend on Allah and Allah only. So thanks for the question and looping me in to that.
Yes, ma'am. The my personal experience with dad, similar, not on the front lines, but certainly being supportive when I could. I think one of the most, even during these times, you see the good and the mercy of Allah. You see the small miracles. And dad was funny. He had such tenacity, even in his condition. I remember my family and I going to see him. And I walked in and I said, "Dad, if you know who I am," this is Salima, "blink your eyes." He blinked his eyes. And I said, "My goodness, the miracle." I know Medina worked with him rigorously.
Yeah.
And I remember sharing a story with her. First came in. It was so funny. Dad had tenacity even in his condition. He looked good. He always smelled good. How he lived in life, Medina and her mom made sure his appearances and his standards was of his standards as much could be respected at that point. So the nurse came in, and she snatched him. She interrupted our visit. And I don't think it was, conscious on her part. She was just trying to get through the numbers. Let me get to him and so I can get to my next patient. You mentioned, how the nurses change, schedules. So perhaps this nurse, particular nurse, was on a schedule change and she was trying to rush things along. And Dad snatched his arm back. And just to tell this woman to leave him alone. So we all started laughing, and the nurse said, "Oh, my goodness." And I didn't even know he had movement in that arm. And at this particular time, he was able to move his toes a little. So the tenacity. So, doctor, one of the things you said, I think it's very important here. certain conditions and time frame is not an immediate death sentence. And our dad was one of those cases.
No.
He suffered, but he lived 5 years, I believe, in his condition.
Yeah. It was a, yeah.
So,
yeah. Go ahead.
You know, so to see that type of tenacity and fervor, to just for him to still be the same person in sickness fighting, you know, spoke to his legacy. I was so impressed with that.
I agree. Thank you. I agree with you.
Yes. Go ahead.
Add that because you bring some important points up regarding caregiving. I believe in my heart of hearts that Allah always chooses one, right? He does. That's just the way that it is. And so, you know, maybe I was the primary caregiver for mom, and Medina was chosen to be the caregiver for dad, because there's always one that Allah chooses. And we all can't have different roles. We have to, you know, their lanes, right? We've heard it saying. And we all, they're all lanes, right? And everybody has their purpose. And so this is not to take away from anybody. You know, my child, maybe my lesson was to caregive for mom on a 24-hour basis to find out who I was as a person, what I was made of. Somebody else's lesson maybe, and we could talk about this maybe the next segment of the show or maybe the next time. Sometimes people have parents who they don't have great relationships with. They've been abused, they've been abandoned, and many people say, well, you know, I don't have that experience. I've never been connected to my mother or my father that way, so I'm not going to take care of them. But let me just caution you and warn you, we are not the judge of our parents. Only Allah is the judge. And just always remember that you may not get along with your parent and it may not be a perfect relationship, but Allah chose them as the agent to give you life in His by His grace and permission. So if nothing else, use the life that He gave you with appreciation. And perhaps maybe you could volunteer to give back to someone else. But don't ever judge your parents. I know we do that. I did it. I'm saying this to the listening audience because I was guilty of that one time. And because of the experience that I had with caregiving, Allah had mercy on me and He showed me the way. And so I just wanted to add that as well because I think that's very important.
Thank you. I think this is so important to leave with our listening audience, and I'm so pleased that you brought up the topic matter, and inshallah, in future segments, we can talk about that when you have difficult relationships, how it is even more important to get beyond that and show that same mercy that Allah is showing us. And I think in closing, my closing remarks is that we're all human. Honor thy mother and thy father so that our days will be longer. And when we take care of our parents, we take care of our community. Different societies, the Japanese, reverence their elderly. And even if we have those difficulties, because we're all striving Muslims, and as we're all striving Muslims, with whatever denomination we decide to associate with, are we doing our best on a daily basis? I thank Almighty God Allah for his guidance, for his strength, for his light. Dr. Nadia, thank you.
You're welcome.
We look forward to more segments in the future. I want to take a moment and thank our Uncle Murad for giving us this opportunity to serve the community with information. As public health professionals, we are change agents. And as a result of being change agents, we're giving information that is resourceful to our community. May Allah continue to bless us. Thank you. Audience, we look forward to having you next Saturday. We have some wonderful guests lined up. Dr. Nadia will not be with us every week, but she will visit in various segments within the month, and we look so forward to it. Thank you again, Doctor, and you have a blessed day.
All praise is due to Allah. You're welcome. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. We look forward to seeing you again next week. Thank you for tuning in. As-salamu alaykum.